Let me speak to Sam McBride from the newsletter. Sam, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Sam, this is the week the RHI inquiry began. I suppose some people will glaze over for a while, but if you excuse the terminology, it is heating up.
That's right. Yesterday was the third day of oral hearings. The inquiry has been working for something in the region of about 8 months in private, gathering evidence, gathering over 1 million pages of evidence, actually. It was revealed that they have got access to some electronic devices. They've had those forensically tested, and they have got, I think, about 200 witness statements from various people who played some role in this scheme, from very senior figures like Arlene Foster and David Stirling, who's now the head of the civil service, right the way down to very junior people or people who were consultants to the scheme or involved at some tangential level to this. What came out yesterday, I think, at the inquiry was really fairly extraordinary and really fairly explosive, not just in terms of getting to the truth of what happened with this scheme and how on earth it ran out of control to such an extent, but also in terms of the politics of this and in terms of the chances, I suppose, of the DUP and Sinn Féin going back into government together.
So for people who haven't been following it closely, talk us through the explosive nature of yesterday.
Well, we were told several things which were separately fairly incredible. One company, we were told, was literally promoting this scheme in its marketing material, in its leaflets, as cash for ash. So that is the phrase which, I suppose, from last December came to be known as a shorthand term, I suppose, for the RHI scheme. But it was certainly not expected at the point where that came out that this was known in those crude terms at the point when the scheme was actually operating. We were told that another boiler company had realised after just 4 weeks of the scheme being set up, so right the way back in late 2012, that it was so lucrative to install multiple boilers, so lots of small boilers which got the higher tariff rate, rather than putting in a single large boiler which would be perhaps more environmentally friendly or would make more sense in a business term, in the business terms, but actually wouldn't get you the sort of profits, and they use that word profits, which you could get from the scheme. More than that, this company actually took that that information to government. They took it to the Department of Justice, and they suggested that for the new police training centre, which at that point was being planned for just outside Cookstown, that this should be what was used, and that actually the Department of Justice could turn a profit of almost £900,000 over 20 years if they did this. The officials at the Department of Justice didn't believe the figures. They didn't think they could be right. And they believed that if they were right, this wouldn't quite be proper, and that somehow this would be a cynical way of approaching the scheme. Then we get into some of the heart of this in terms of the role of Arlene Foster, the role of DUP SPADs in this. We were told that Arlene Foster, who of course had set up the scheme without cost controls, she then, at the point where those cost controls were belatedly and really far too late, being put in by her successor, Jonathan Bell, in late 2015, she apparently phoned then special advisor to Jonathan Bell. She asked him on behalf of a constituent whether they could delay the cost controls by a week or two. That was then passed up the line to the permanent secretary of the department, who made very clear that he would not do that unless he was formally ordered to do that in what is known as a ministerial direction, a very serious instruction to civil servants, really the nuclear option, I suppose, for a minister, where a civil servant says that he can't justify in terms of the wider public interest doing a particular course of action. Once that information then came back to her that it was going to cost millions of pounds to taxpayers if the scheme was kept open, she then, it seems, very quickly accepted that. So that particular request didn't have any material impact on the scheme staying open further than was already the case at that point. However, prior to that, it was also made clear in some disputed testimony between various DUP SPADs at that point, special advisors to ministers, that some of them had allegedly been trying to delay cost controls at that point. One of those advisors, Timothy Kerr, who was the advisor to Jonathan Bell, he has accepted in his written evidence to the inquiry that he did try to delay cost controls. He says that really he was acting on instructions from other people in the party. One of those people, he says, was Timothy Johnston, who is now the chief executive of the DUP and really probably, I think it's fair to say, the most senior non-elected person within the DUP, somebody who has enormous influence within the party. Timothy Johnston disputes that. He says that he never tried to delay cost controls or to soften them in any way. So that is something which, when those two people come to give oral evidence, will be teased out. But all sorts of allegations and revelations coming out yesterday.
Yes, because in the headline of your paper this morning, and you've covered this from day one in great detail in the newsletter, Shock RHI Revelations is the headline. Then bullet point one, company was promoting scheme for as cash for ash. Bullet point number two, Foster tried to delay cost controls for one constituent. And bullet point number three, DUP SPAD sent sensitive document to family members. Are these claims that are being made, or is this actual fact that's being discovered?
It's a very good question, and the answer to that is that it differs in each case, and I've tried to set out in some of those cases where it's disputed, and in some of those cases, such as with Timothy Kearns, where he accepts the fact that he tried to delay cost controls, but he then, presumably in his evidence, which we haven't seen in full, we've just heard that, really opened up in part by counsel for the inquiry, David Schofield, QC. I presume we'll then go into some detail as to why exactly he did what he did. But some of this is disputed, some of it is not. And I think one of the difficulties for us as journalists here is that we're operating in a slightly difficult environment, because normally when we serious allegations about someone, we're able to put those to the person, we're able to get some sense of balance in our reporting of that. And you really have, I suppose, claim and counterclaim, and that's a traditional tenet of journalism. In this instance, the chairman of the inquiry, Sir Patrick Coughlin, a retired appeal court judge, has really made very clear that he doesn't want people who are going to be called as witnesses to be really speaking about any of the evidence outside the inquiry. So that makes it slightly difficult for us. It also makes it slightly difficult, it has to be said, for people like Arlene Foster, like Lee Spads, because this evidence is being opened up in part, but we're not getting the full story. So it's almost an unfolding tapestry which we have, and we're going to get little pieces at a time. But yesterday, really, I think we got a deluge. And one of the issues which I didn't actually speak about earlier, which is perhaps the most significant, is an email which doesn't seem to be disputed in terms of the fact that it does exist and that the inquiry has got hold of it. This was an email from Foster's special advisor Andrew Crawford when she was the finance minister in 2015. This was around the point where the scheme was really running out of control. Civil servants were saying to their political masters, we need to do something about this. And for whatever reason, there was this this reluctance on the part of some of those individuals to actually move forward with cost controls. And something which Andrew Crawford said in this email to Timothy Kearns, one of his fellow SPADs, was that he really couldn't understand the, and I'll just read you exactly what he said. He said, I'm a little confused over what the problem is for the non-domestic scheme. The scheme is being funded from AMI, that's annually managed expenditure, which is money which comes directly from London, directly from the Treasury, so it's not out of Stormont's block grant. And he then went on to say, therefore, if we go over our 4% target, all that will happen is that we will get more than our fair share of the UK pot. I would have thought that this is to Northern Ireland's advantage. And then he goes on to set out some other facts. That is really quite extraordinary, because here you have the special advisor to the finance minister, the person who is charged with prudence in public spending, I suppose, and being cautious and being careful, monitoring public spending, seemingly saying that even if this scheme goes over budget, that's not really a problem, and actually it could be a good thing. And that seems to be founded on this fundamental misunderstanding, which was certainly at the heart of how some people involved with the scheme saw it, that they thought London was basically picking up the tab for it. And it seems to be that at the point where they suddenly and quite belatedly realised that was not the case, that was the point at which there was real panic. But really, as late as this point in mid-2015, it would seem that the special advisor to the finance minister thought this. And one of the questions then will be, what did Arlene Foster herself, as the finance minister, understand the funding arrangements to be at that point?
A very strange way to do business. As for the pay-per-view bit, as some people are calling it, when do we hear from Arlene Foster or from a Jonathan Bale-type character?
Both of those people are going to be among the last people you're called, really. This inquiry is operating on the principle that it's really going in terms of seniority, and the most junior people are coming first for the most part. the most senior people and those who were involved for the longest period are coming at the end. So I think Arlene Foster is perhaps going to be the last witness. If she's not the last witness, she's certainly going to be very late in the process. And likewise with Jonathan Bell, he will be probably slightly earlier than that, but not for many months. The inquiry has not set out a timetable, but I mean, I would not be surprised if we're still reporting on this in even 12 months' time.
Sam, there is a danger people will glaze over, but they'll be able to keep right up to date with your coverage. It's been excellent so far. Thanks for speaking to us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Sam McBride from the newsletter, the political editor.